Chapter 22. I was a little surprised then, indeed, and so was my nephew the captain, for he had heard such terrible stories of them in the island, and having never been in those seas before, that he could not tell what to think of it, but said, two or three times, we should all be devoured. I must confess, considering we were becalmed, and the current set strong towards the shore, I liked it the worse. However, I bade them not be afraid, but bring the ship to an anchor, as soon as we came so near, as to know that we must engage them. The weather continued calm, and they came on apace towards us, so I gave orders to come to an anchor, and furl all our sails. As for the savages, I told them they had nothing to fear but fire, and therefore they should get their boats out, and fasten them, one close by the head and the other by the stern, and man them both well, and wait the issue in that posture. This I did, that the men in the boats might be ready with sheets, and buckets to put out any fire these savages might endeavor to fix to the outside of the ship. In this posture we lay by for them, and in a little while they came up with us. But never was such a horrid sight seen by Christians. Though my mate was much mistaken in his calculation of their number, yet when they came up we reckoned about 126 canoes, some of them had 16 or 17 men in them, and some more, and the least 6 or 7. When they came nearer to us, they seemed to be struck with wonder and astonishment, as at a sight which doubtless they had never seen before, nor could they at first, as we afterwards understood, know what to make of us. They came boldly up, however, very near to us, and seemed to go about to row round us, but we called to our men in the boats, not to let them come too near them. This very order brought us to an engagement with them, without our designing it, for 5 or 6 of the large canoes came so near our long boat that our men beckoned with their hands to keep them back, which they understood very well, and went back. But at their retreat about 50 arrows came on board us from those boats, and one of our men in the long boat was very much wounded. However, I called to them not to fire by any means. But we handed down some deal boards into the boat, and the carpenter presently set up a kind of fence, like waste boards, to cover them from the arrows of the savages, if they should shoot again. About half an hour afterwards they all came up in a body astern of us, and so near, that we could easily discern what they were, though we could not tell their design, and I easily found they were some of my old friends, the same sort of savages that I had been used to engage with. In a short time more they rowed a little farther out to sea, till they came directly broadside with us, and then rowed down straight upon us, till they came so near that they could hear us speak. Upon this, I ordered all my men to keep close, lest they should shoot any more arrows, and made all our guns ready. But being so near, as to be within hearing, I made Friday go out upon the deck, and call out aloud to them in his language, to know what they meant. Whether they understood him or not, that I knew not, but as soon as he had called to them, 6 of them, who were in the foremost or nighest boat to us, turned their canoes from us, and stooping down, showed us their naked backs. Whether this was a defiance or challenge we knew not, or whether it was done in mere contempt, or as a signal to the rest, but immediately Friday cried out they were going to shoot, and, unhappily for him, poor fellow, they let fly about 300 of their arrows, and to my inexpressible grief, killed poor Friday, no other man being in their sight. The poor fellow was shot with no less than 3 arrows, and about 3 more fell very near him. Such unlucky marksmen they were. I was so annoyed at the loss of my old trusty servant and companion, that I immediately ordered 5 guns, 2 be loaded with small shot, and 4 with great, and gave them such a broadside as they had never heard in their lives before. They were not above half a cable's length off when we fired, and our gunners took their aim so well, that 3 or 4 of their canoes were overset, as we had reason to believe, by 1 shot only. The ill manners of turning up their bare backs to us gave us no great offense, neither did I know for certain whether that which would pass for the greatest contempt among us might be understood so by them or not, Therefore, in return, I had only resolved to have fired 4 or 5 guns at them with powder only, which I knew would frighten them sufficiently. But when they shot at us directly with all the fury they were capable of, and especially as they had killed my poor Friday, whom I so entirely loved and valued, and who, indeed, so well deserved it, I thought myself not only justifiable before God and man, but would have been very glad if I could have overset every canoe there and drowned every one of them. I can neither tell how many we killed nor how many we wounded at this broadside, but sure such a fright and hurry never were seen among such a multitude. There were 13 or 14 of their canoes split and overset in all, and the men all set a swimming. The rest, frightened out of their wits, scoured away as fast as they could, taking but little care to save those whose boats were split or spoiled with our shot. So I suppose that many of them were lost, and our men took up one poor fellow swimming for his life above an hour after they were all gone. The small shot from our cannon must needs kill and wound a great many, but, in short, we never knew how it went with them, for they fled so fast that in 3 hours or thereabouts we could not see above 3 or 4 straggling canoes, nor did we ever see the rest any more. For a breeze of wind springing up the same evening, we weighed and set sail for the Brazils. We had a prisoner, indeed, but the creature was so sullen that he would neither eat nor speak, and we all fancied he would starve himself to death. But I took a way to cure him. For I had made them take him and turn him into the long boat, and make him believe they would toss him into the sea again, and so leave him where they found him, if he would not speak. Nor would that do, but they really did throw him into the sea, and came away from him. Then he followed them, for he swam like a cork, and called to them in his tongue, though they knew not one word of what he said. However, at last they took him in again. And then he began to be more tractable. Nor did I ever design they should drown him. We were now under sail again, but I was the most disconsolate creature alive for want of my man Friday, and would have been very glad to have gone back to the island, to have taken one of the rest from thence for my occasion, but it could not be. So we went on. We had one prisoner, as I have said, and it was a long time before we could make him understand anything. But in time our men taught him some English, and he began to be a little tractable. Afterwards, we inquired what country he came from, but could make nothing of what he said, for his speech was so odd, all gutturals, and he spoke in the throat in such a hollow, odd manner, that we could never form a word after him, and we were all of opinion that they might speak that language as well if they were gagged as otherwise. Nor could we perceive that they had any occasion either for teeth, tongue, lips, or palate, but formed their words just as a hunting horn forms a tune with an open throat. He told us, however, some time after, when we had taught him to speak a little English, that they were going with their kings to fight a great battle. When he said kings, we asked him how many kings. He said they were 5 nations. We could not make him understand the plurales, and that they all joined to go against 2 nations. We asked him what made them come up to us. He said, to make it a great wonder look. Here it is to be observed that all those natives, as also those of Africa when they learn English, always add 2 e's at the end of the words where we use 1, and they place the accent upon them, as make he, take he, and the like. Nay, I could hardly make Friday leave it off, though at last he did. And now I name the poor fellow once more, I must take my last leave of him. Poor honest Friday! We buried him with all the decency and solemnity possible, by putting him into a coffin, and throwing him into the sea, and I caused them to fire 11 guns for him. So ended the life of the most grateful, faithful, honest, and most affectionate servant that ever man had. We went now away with a fair wind for Brazil, and in about 12 days' time we made land, in the latitude of 5 degrees south of the line, being the northeasternmost land of all that part of America. We kept on Espaillé, in sight of the shore 4 days, when we made Cape St. Augustine, and in 3 days came to an anchor off the Bay of All Saints, the old place of my deliverance, from whence came both my good and evil fate. Never ship came to this port that had less business than I had, and yet it was with great difficulty that we were admitted to hold the least correspondence on shore. Not my partner himself, who was alive, and made a great figure among them, not my two merchant trustees, not the fame of my wonderful preservation in the island, could obtain me that favor. My partner, however, remembering that I had given 500 moiters to the prior of the monastery of the Augustins, and 272 to the poor, went to the monastery, and obliged the prior, that then was to go to the governor, and get leave for me personally, with the captain and one more, besides 8 seamen, to come on shore, and no more. And this upon condition, absolutely capitulated for, that we should not offer to land any goods out of the ship, or to carry any person away without license. They were so strict with us, as to landing any goods, that it was with extreme difficulty, that I got on shore 3 bales of English goods, such as fine broadcloths, stuffs, and some linen, which I had brought for a present to my partner. He was a very generous, open-hearted man, although he began, like me, with little at first. Though he knew, not that I had the least design of giving him anything, he sent me on board a present of fresh provisions, wine, and sweetmeats, worth about 30 moiters, including some tobacco, and 3 or 4 fine medals of gold. But I was even with him in my present, which, as I have said, consisted of fine broadcloth, English stuffs, lace, and fine holland. Also, I delivered him about the value of £100 sterling in the same goods, for other uses, and I obliged him to set up the sloop, which I had brought with me from England, as I have said, for the use of my colony, in order to send the refreshments I intended to my plantation. Accordingly, he got hands, and finished the sloop in a very few days, for she was already framed, and I gave the master of her such instructions, that he could not miss the place, nor did he, as I had an account from my partner afterwards. I got him soon loaded with the small cargo I sent them, and one of our seamen, that had been on shore with me there, offered to go with the sloop and settle there, upon my letter to the governor Spaniard, to allot him a sufficient quantity of land for a plantation, and on my giving him some clothes and tools for his planting work, which he said he understood, having been an old planter at Maryland, and a buccaneer into the bargain. I encouraged the fellow by granting all he desired, and, as an addition, I gave him the savage whom we had taken prisoner of war to be his slave, and ordered the governor Spaniard to give him his share of everything he wanted with the rest. When we came to fit this man out, my old partner told me there was a certain very honest fellow, a Brazil planter of his acquaintance, who had fallen into the displeasure of the church. "I know not what the matter is with him," says he, "but, on my conscience, I think he is a heretic in his heart, and he has been obliged to conceal himself for fear of the Inquisition." He then told me that he would be very glad of such an opportunity to make his escape, with his wife and 2 daughters, and if I would let them go to my island, and allot them a plantation, he would give them a small stock, to begin with, for the officers of the Inquisition had seized all his effects and estate, and he had nothing left but a little household stuff and 2 slaves. And, adds he, "though I hate his principles, yet I would not have him fall into their hands, for he will be assuredly burned alive if he does." I granted this presently, and joined my Englishman with them. And we concealed the man, and his wife and daughters, on board our ship, till the sloop put out to go to sea, and then having put all their goods on board some time before, we put them on board the sloop, after she was got out of the bay. Our seaman was mightily pleased with this new partner, and their stocks, indeed, were much alike, rich in tools, in preparations, and a farm, but nothing to begin with, except as above. However, they carried over with them what was worth all the rest, some materials for planting sugar canes, with some plants of canes, which he, I mean the Brazil planter, understood very well. Among the rest of the supplies sent to my tenants in the island, I sent them by the sloop 3 milch cows and 5 calves, about 22 hogs, among them 3 sows, 2 mares, and a stone horse. For my Spaniards, according to my promise, I engaged 3 Brazil women to go, and recommended it to them to marry them, and use them kindly. I could have procured more women, but I remembered that the poor persecuted man had 2 daughters, and that there were but 5 of the Spaniards that wanted partners. The rest had wives of their own, though in another country. All this cargo arrived safe, and, as you may easily suppose, was very welcome to my old inhabitants, who were now, with this addition, between 60 and 70 people, besides little children, of which there were a great many. I found letters at London from them all, by way of Lisbon, when I came back to England. I have now done with the island, and all manner of discourse about it. And whoever reads the rest of my memorandums, would do well to turn his thoughts entirely from it, and expect to read of the follies of an old man, not warned by his own arms, much less by those of other men, to beware. Not cooled by almost 40 years' miseries and disappointments, not satisfied with prosperity beyond expectation, nor made cautious by afflictions and distress beyond example. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.